Well, thank you, and it's really an honor to be here to have the chance to talk about the work we've been doing at Nebraska with regard to grain mineral concentrations. This work was supported by the USDA NIFAS, Triticale Coordinated Agricultural Project, or the TCAP, and all done actually in the context of trials to evaluate nitrogen use efficiency in a large association mapping panel of hard winter wheat. The photo in the background is actually our 2013 trial in Nebraska, and in the foreground is Steve Benziger, my other advisor and wheat breeder at Nebraska. And I'll talk to you today about the composition of the panel, the trials and analyses we've done, and particularly the mineral profiling that was part of this project, and a little bit about what we've learned so far. Steve began assembling the Hard Winter Wheat Association mapping panel late about 2006 to 2008, and the panel is actually comprised of lines that originate from states as far south as Texas and as far north as Montana. There are 299 lines in the panel. They represent both white and red wheats, private and public wheats, and importantly, in addition to the geographic or adaptational diversity, the material is really diverse in terms of its time period in which it was released. These wheats span the history of wheat breeding in the Great Plains. So it's really a fascinating panel to walk through. As I said, these trials were conducted in the context of looking at nitrogen use efficiency. And the four trials that we analyzed minerals in were grown in two Nebraska environments and in two Oklahoma environments. And we'll return to the soil test data later. But I want to point out that we had two main plots in each environment that were differentiated by 40 units of nitrogen that were applied in the spring. And for the purposes of the mineral analysis, this nitrogen treatment had absolutely no effect. So in effect, we have two replications in each of these four environments. Because spatial variation and soil variation is such an important component of what happens with minerals, it was really helpful that we laid out these main plots in an augmented design. So we arranged the genotypes into blocks of 22, as shown in blue. And within those blocks of 22, we had 20 of the test genotypes in the panel. And we had two check genotypes, Jagger and Settler, which are well-adapted genotypes. And what this structure allowed us to do was to account for the spatial variation in the field, and it provided us with some very good estimates of experimental error. So this was a powerful screening design for this type of analysis. We wet ashed the grain samples as whole grain samples in Brian's lab. And we washed the grain samples prior to analysis with dilute HCl and pure water as per Rice protocols. Used a lot of nitric acid and hydrogen peroxide to break down 2 grams of grain, but it works. And then we submitted the resuspended residues to our core facility for ICP mass spec at the University of Nebraska. Okay. I'm going to set up Neil Harris, who's talking to us this afternoon, and talk to you about cadmium for a minute. We really didn't do this work to look at cadmium, okay? So I need to be clear, we had much more interest in iron and zinc. The cadmium came out. Cadmium toxicity was first identified as a health issue in Japanese women about my age, as it turns out, in the 1950s, because their kidneys were grossly atrophied. It accumulates in the kidneys with a half-life of 15 to 30 years, so it stays with you. It causes cancer, and in many ways, this is a women's issue because absorption is increased, cadmium absorption is increased in women with reduced iron status, and pregnancy increases dietary absorption of cadmium. Okay. And particularly for women who subsist primarily on grain-based diets with high extraction flours, this could be a real issue. Grains contribute greater than 25% of human dietary cadmium consumption, so they're a very significant source. The codex standard for cadmium in grain is 0.2 ppm, And in some countries, this is regulatory. And I have a spike of durum in the lower right corner to remind me to explain that this is cadmium concentration in grain is a well-characterized problem in durum. It's been known for over 20 years to be a significant issue. But it hasn't been thought to be an issue in hexaploid bred wheat. It has been largely regarded as a special issue for durum. Okay? And the data that I'm going to show you today hopefully will change your mind. Sources of cadmium are primarily anthropomorphic, the activities of humans. And this photo is a gift from my husband from rural India. We think about cadmium particularly being a problem where industrial activities like this small village brick factory adjoin agricultural production, such as the wheat field in front. Cadmium is a global concern. Our news reports last spring in China documented dramatic increases in the rates of soil cadmium concentration in China. It's an issue for the University of Minnesota at their Rosemont facility. It's an issue in Ukraine and in Russia. And there's literature from Iran, particularly along the Iran-Iraq border. So worldwide, cadmium contamination of soils is a significant environmental issue. Okay, so what we saw that changed our minds about cadmium and hexaploid bred wheat. These are histograms, frequency distributions of grain cadmium concentrations in the Nebraska 2012, Nebraska 2013, and the combined Oklahoma trials. Brian, okay, great. And if I point this properly, this will work. What I want to point out here is that the x-axis of cadmium concentrations are very different in these three trials. So we go up to 0.6 ppm here in Nebraska 2012, 0.4 in Nebraska in 2013, and only 0.025 in Oklahoma. So we brought in low cadmium grain from Oklahoma, but much higher cadmium grain from the two Nebraska trials. And the mean cadmium in 2012 in Nebraska was over the codex limit, a little under in 2013. I have highlighted here genotypes that had cadmium concentrations more than two standard deviations above the mean. And what we see is that a lot of the same wheats show up in each of these trials. Okay. So what we found is that between the two Nebraska locations where we had relatively high mean cadmium concentration, our heritability on an entry mean basis, I keep doing this, heritability was almost 80%. So this is a very highly heritable trait, genetically controlled. We can breed for this. Okay. So why are these trials so different? I told you I was going to come back to the soil test data, and I am. The Nebraska trials were conducted in low pH soils, in fact, very low pH soil in 2012. And acidic soils increase the mobility of cadmium, or the bioavailability of cadmium. The Oklahoma soils are higher pH soils. Note that we had really good zinc levels in these soils, so this isn't a consequence of zinc deficiency. The other thing that's important, obviously, is the available cadmium concentration. And these are the chelatable, or essentially what we think of as being the bioavailable cadmium concentrations in these soils. And these concentrations in Nebraska in 2012 rival the Iran-Iraq border. Okay. These concentrations look like some of the most seriously affected areas of North Dakota. Okay. So we have both the right soil pH and the right cadmium concentrations to really be able to screen for this trait. So what's special about Nebraska that we have this data? In fact, these trials were conducted at our Ag Research and Development Center about 40 miles north of Lincoln, which is a former munitions factory. There were four bomb loading lines that you can kind of see highlighted here, spaced a mile apart, that were used throughout the Second World War in Korea. Okay, a lot of industrial activity there making weapons. This is a woman spraying coatings on bombs. Cadmium is used in coatings, in fact, for munitions in the Second World War. Our trial sites, very much proximal to this facility. So we are blessed with a particularly good site for looking at cadmium. So So this is really why I'm not too worried about eating Nebraska wheat in general. I think this is a very specific, very specific issue, but it provides us an opportunity. Okay. Now, I think as we know, cadmium and zinc share a similar ionic structure. They're thought to share similar transporters. So there may be some relationship between what happens with cadmium and what happens with zinc. We also know from the work in Durham that durums that accumulate cadmium in grain are really deficient in the capacity to sequester it in the roots, that they have higher cadmium concentrations in above ground tissue if they have higher cadmium concentration in the grain. And so you can select using above ground concentration. And because we were doing NUE studies, we had above ground tissues at anthesis. And so we wanted to see what those concentrations in above ground tissues at anthesis in six genotypes that vary for cadmium accumulation in the grain look like relative to the concentrations in grain. So I have on the x-axis here the tissue concentrations in total above ground tissue at anthesis, and I have on the vertical axis the concentration in grain for cadmium. And I've got the equivalence line across the middle here. And what's evident is in both 2012 and 2013, we can fit a common slope, that there's a common relationship of grain cadmium to above ground tissue cadmium. We could use this for selection, and that might be helpful for us in breeding. The other thing I think that's significant here is that generally the tissue concentrations are higher than the grain concentrations, so the plants aren't concentrating cadmium in the grain relative to its concentrations in above ground tissues. I want to contrast this with zinc. Again, tissue concentrations on the x-axis, grain concentrations on the y-axis. There's not a consistent relationship between concentration in above ground tissue and concentration in the grain. And in fact, the concentrations in the grain are higher than the concentrations in the tissue, consistent with actually concentrating zinc in the grain relative to the above ground tissue. So the plants are handling these two things very differently. Okay. So this is an association mapping panel, and I promised I'd talk about association mapping. We have 92 KI select assay data for 286 of the genotypes in the panel, about 20,000 markers. I implemented the GWAS in TASEL and validated it in RRBLUF. Used a conservative model for the GWAS, incorporating both structure and kinship, and looked both in the individual environments and then across environments in the GWAS analysis, and assessed marker significance using positive false discovery. Okay, so this is a Manhattan plot for the multi-environment analysis for cadmium, and the individual environment analyses look very much the same as this. We have a significant QTL on chromosome 5A, and not much anywhere else. Contrast that to zinc, where we pick up a significant QTL on chromosome 4B, nothing on 5A, very different. This actually is co-localized with the QTL I'm seeing for nitrogen harvest index in this panel, consistent with physiological associations of zinc and nitrogen handling. Okay. So we're back to the cadmium Manhattan plot, RQTL on 5A and bread wheat. The Durham QTL is on 5B, well established. We wanted to know, are these homologous? Are we seeing the same thing in bread wheat effectively, just in a different, on the different homeolog, on the different genome? And we looked to the barley genome to provide us some answers to this question. I have barley chromosome 5 from 400 million to 565 million base pairs here. The SNP markers that are significant are shown in black. Okay. There are some genes to kind of locate us, phytochelatin synthase, the vernalization on chromosome 5. Our most consistently and most significant SNP marker is this marker here, this 22932 marker, present in 29% of the population. And it tracks right into here, just proximal to vernalization and phytochelatin synthase. These markers in red are really familiar to Neil Harris. These are wheat express sequence tags. And these Weed Express sequence tags are linked within 0.7 centimorgans of the CDU1 locus in Durham. So the conclusion that we reach from this, given that this is where the Express sequence tags that colocalize with the Durham QTL are, and this is our most significant QTL, is that we probably are in fact looking at a homeologous QTL for cadmium accumulation. There's some evidence for epistasis. Actually, the most, the highest effect SNP that we have is up here, but it's present in only 9% of the lines in the panel, so its significance is not as high. And its effect depends on the allele state of our primary SNP here. That in the presence of the low cadmium allele here, the SNP here has absolutely no effect, but in the presence of the high cadmium allele here, we have a very significant effect. So there's some evidence for epistasis. We, of course, went looking for candidate genes. We'd really, you know, kind of like to know what's doing this. And so we put all the barley predicted transcripts through BLAST2GO and looked for things that might be related to cadmium accumulation or cadmium sequestration. And really, the only things we found were, of course, the phytochelatin synthetase and this ATP binding cassette that would potentially move the chelated cadmium into vacuoles in the roots. The rice HMA3 and the barley HMA3 are up here, and there's another HMA3 domain right about here. So there's some possibility for a role for those, but at least aligning with barley, they're distal. Now, I don't want you to walk away from here thinking we know everything about this that we need to know. We have some evidence that there are other things going on genetically with this, and I've shown kind of schematically the highest cadmium marker haplotype that we have, and presented a few representatives of that marker haplotype. Their cadmium concentrations in 2012 and 2013 and their rank in the trial. So this is a very high cadmium haplotype. This is kind of our next highest haplotype, the lower allele here at that distal SNP. Again, some very high cadmium concentrations. This is a low cadmium haplotype, typical representatives of that, and they're ranked in the panel. Okay, so that's kind of a classic picture. Where I have difficulty, though, is when I look at the data for the wheat Judith out of Montana. It has the high cadmium marker haplotype, but in fact, low grain cadmium concentration. I look at the data for hail, a wheat out of Colorado State. Again, a pretty high cadmium marker haplotype, but low cadmium concentration in the grain. And then I come to TAM112 bullet and Wichita, which should have low cadmium based on marker haplotype, but in fact have relatively high cadmium concentrations in the grain. Okay, so marker haplotype isn't telling us everything that we need to know here. It's a good start. So the implications for the wheat breeder. This is important. High cadmium alleles really are present in our contemporary Great Plains hard winter wheat germplasm. TAM111 was among the 10 highest cadmium lines in every environment, and in some crop years, TAM111 has been the most widely grown wheat in Texas, Kansas, and Nebraska. Very important wheat. A lot of crosses made to TAM111. OK Bullet and TAM112, also important wheats in the germplasm, were consistently in the top 10% in both Nebraska trials. And Great Plains germplasm moves around the world in breeding. Breeders can reliably select against the high cadmium genotypes if they have access to high cadmium trial environments. And we actually have a couple of those in Nebraska. Selection against grain cadmium wouldn't be expected to reduce grain zinc concentration, so this is good news for biofortification breeding. There is an opportunity for marker-assisted selection in some populations, but we do need to do some work in some targeted biparental populations to tease out some of those inconsistencies that we see in the haplotype-phenotype association. I need to thank some people, my colleague Catherine Frells, without whom this would have been impossible, our cooperators at Oklahoma State, Brett Carver and Brian Arnell, the redox biology lab, the people who did the SNP work. There are many people who made this work possible. And finally, I want to thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Philippa.
I'm just wondering, with your candidate change in Bali, do you know if there's an academy studied in Bali and if the detail would look like the same region in Bali?
Haven't seen that in Bali. And it would be interesting to look at in Bali. It would be interesting. Dr. Gore? Is that you, Michael? Grusak. Oh, Grusak, Mike Grusak, sorry.
Right.
Right place, wrong person.
Yeah. Thanks for the presentation. You mentioned that there appeared to be a good relationship between brain cadmium and referred to it as above ground.
Just
above ground, something that you're talking about.
It is, if you take the whole plant from the ground level up, and you dry it and you grind the whole thing up and you measure the concentration of cadmium in it.
Minus the grain.
Whole thing.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. At anthesis, so it's very, very early, so there's not really grain yet. Okay? But the whole.
My other question is, at what time point are you talking about?
Yeah. No, we're talking about, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days after anthesis, but there's not much grain in those. Relative to the biomass that's there in those plants at that time, and I think you saw the picture of kind of what the wheat looks like there. It's plant.
What's your opinion about the genetic basis for these traits? Based on what I've seen, just a couple of videos.
My opinion is that given how heritable it is, the genetic basis is probably pretty simple, and it's very simple, and I think we'll hear more about that this afternoon.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.